Space Generation, The New Frontier. Tomorrow's Space Economy Today.
What if you could ask the universe a question and have it calculate every possible answer all at the same time?
That sounds like something straight out of one of your scripts. A line for the all-knowing AI, right before it takes over the ship.
Exactly. As a writer, that's what hooks me. My entire job is exploring possibilities, running through every what if. The idea of a machine that operates on that same principle, a machine that can hold paradoxes and probabilities in its hands all at once, it's the ultimate storytelling engine. But now, it's not just a story.
Right. And for me, it's always been a bit more grounded. I grew up staring at posters of the Saturn V, just marveling at the sheer brute force and the mind-boggling math it took to get that thing off the ground. We've been solving the problems of space with, well, with better and faster calculators, essentially. But this is different. It's like we've been trying to describe a symphony using only two notes, and someone just handed us the entire orchestra.
An orchestra to compose the future of exploration. That's what we're here to talk about today. We're on the edge of a new era, where the two most complex frontiers we know, the vastness of outer space and the bizarre, wonderful world of the quantum realm, are beginning to merge.
And the potential there is staggering. We're not just talking about faster mission planning. We're talking about fundamentally changing our relationship with the cosmos. It's a quantum leap in every sense of the word.
Welcome to Space Generation. Today, we're exploring that leap, the intersection of quantum computing and space exploration. Music swells slightly, then settles back into the background. So, when we talk about a leap like that, my mind immediately goes to the headlines. I remember seeing the words quantum supremacy. It sounds definitive, like a finish line was crossed. The moment the AI becomes self-aware, you know? That's the story, right? A machine finally does something no classical computer on Earth could ever do.
It is a great headline, and it was a huge moment, scientifically, when Google's Sycamore processor performed a calculation that they claimed would take a supercomputer, 10,000 years? But the reality is a bit more complicated. It's less of a finish line and more like the first time a toddler manages to stand up on their own for 3 seconds.
Only 3 seconds? So what happened? Did the toddler fall over?
Well, the other toddlers in the room, specifically IBM, basically said, "Hang on." They argued that Google had misjudged the capabilities of the classical supercomputer. They came back and said, "Actually, we could do that calculation in a couple of days, not millennia." And since then, other researchers have found even better classical algorithms. The gap keeps shrinking.
So it's not supremacy. It's more like a temporary lead in a very, very strange race. A race where the track keeps changing shape.
Exactly. And the tasks themselves, this is the crucial part. The problem Sycamore solved was designed specifically for a quantum computer to solve. It wasn't calculating asteroid trajectories or designing a new alloy. It was, in essence, proving it could be itself. It's like building a key and a lock at the same time and then celebrating that the key fits the lock.
That feels a little hollow. I mean, from a narrative standpoint, it's a bit of a letdown. You expect the hero to save the city, not just demonstrate they know how to use their one very specific superpower in an empty room.
It does. And that's the skepticism you see in the field. There was a Nature article last year that pretty bluntly said, for now, quantum computers are useful for absolutely nothing.
Ouch. Okay, that's a reality check. Absolutely nothing?
In a practical sense, yes. Meaning for any real-world problem you have right now, your laptop or a server farm is still vastly more useful. The issue is noise and errors. A quantum state is an incredibly delicate thing. It's like trying to have a whispered conversation in the middle of a rock concert.
The universe is the rock concert.
The universe is the rock concert. The slightest vibration, a stray bit of heat, a magnetic field, it all just screams at the qubits, and they lose their quantum nature. It's called decoherence. So while they can, for a fleeting moment, hold all those possibilities you mentioned, the orchestra, as you put it, the symphony collapses into noise before the song is over.
So the challenge isn't just building more qubits, it's soundproofing them. Building the world's most perfect concert hall for them to play in.
That is the billion-dollar, maybe trillion-dollar engineering problem. We're getting better. We have error correction techniques. But the overhead for that error correction is immense. It's like needing 100 people just to make sure one violinist plays the right note. It tempers the optimism with a heavy dose of, well, physics.
100 people to make one violinist play the right note. Wow. That's not an orchestra. That's a logistical nightmare. It makes this incredible power sound so fragile, so profoundly difficult. But let's say they solve it. Let's say we build the perfect soundproofed concert hall. What's the first piece of music we ask it to play? For space exploration, what is that first killer app that makes all this effort worthwhile?
It's funny, because the answer is probably something that sounds incredibly mundane at first, but is actually revolutionary.
Okay, I'm braced for mundane. Hit me.
It's not simulating a black hole. It's not charting a course through a wormhole. The first real, tangible breakthrough will likely be designing a molecule.
A molecule. Okay, you are right. That is less grand than I imagined. I was thinking, you know, origin of the universe. You're offering me better soap?
Better rocket fuel. Or a new catalyst that can efficiently pull oxygen out of Martian regolith. Or a new, lightweight alloy for a spacecraft's frame that's 10 times stronger than anything we have now.
Ah. Okay, I see where you're going. It's not about the molecule itself. It's what the molecule does.
It's about what it can do. Think about how we discover new materials now. It's a bit clumsy. It's a lot of computer modeling mixed with educated guesswork and then a whole lot of trial and error in a lab. We're trying to find a specific key for a very complex lock by trying millions of almost right keys.
And a quantum computer.
A quantum computer can look at the lock, the chemical problem you want to solve, and because it can hold all the possibilities in superposition at once, it can essentially deduce the shape of the perfect key. It can simulate the quantum interactions of atoms with perfect accuracy. We could design from the ground up a material with the exact properties we need for, say, a heat shield to survive atmospheric entry on a gas giant. That's not just an improvement, it's a paradigm shift.
So you're not just finding a needle in a haystack. You're telling the haystack to build you the perfect needle. That has a certain narrative flair to it. It's creation, not just discovery.
That's a great way to put it. And once you master that, you can move from single molecules to entire systems. And that's where my mind goes next. Simulation. Truly high-fidelity simulation.
Right, because we do simulations now. We model orbital mechanics, atmospheric entry. It's the foundation of every mission.
We do, but they're based on approximations. We can't possibly account for every variable in a complex system, like, say, the magnetosphere of Jupiter. There are just too many interacting parts. We get a good enough picture. But with a powerful, error-corrected quantum computer, you could create a digital twin of Jupiter's magnetic field. You could throw a virtual probe into it a million different ways, with a million different variables, and see what really happens in that chaotic environment before you ever build the physical spacecraft.
You're taking the guesswork out of exploring the most dangerous places in the solar system. You can run the mission before you run the mission. My God, the number of catastrophic failures that could prevent, the probes we've lost because of one unforeseen variable.
The Beagle 2, Schiaparelli. You could model every potential outcome simultaneously. It moves failure from the real world into the virtual world. And that lets you be so much bolder in what you attempt. You can design a mission that operates right on the hairy edge of what's possible, because you've already explored the consequences of stepping over that edge 1,000 times in the simulation.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It changes the very nature of what it means to be an explorer. Right now, there's this this heroic, tragic element to it. We send these incredibly expensive, one-of-a-kind probes into the dark, and we hold our breath, knowing they might not make it. But if you can run the mission a million times first, does exploration lose some of its soul? Or does it just become smarter?
I think it becomes more ambitious. The soul of exploration isn't in the failure, it's in the asking of the question. It's in the desire to go. It just lets us ask bigger questions. Instead of can we survive a landing on Europa, the question becomes what's the absolute best way to drill through miles of ice to see what's in the ocean below? You shift from a question of survival to a question of optimization and discovery.
From suspense to science fiction. I like that. It removes the fear so you can focus on the wonder. So we've talked about the fragile beginnings, the toddler learning to stand. We've talked about the first practical steps, designing materials, running simulations. What's the final act? The thing that lives up to that initial crazy idea of asking the universe a question and getting all the answers.
Oh, now you're asking for the screenwriter's ending. Chuckles. For me, the ultimate application is data. The sheer fire hose of data we're going to get from new telescopes, from planetary sensors, from the Square Kilometer Array. It's more than we can possibly sift through. We're looking for a single anomalous signal in a cosmic ocean of noise.
The ultimate needle in a haystack problem.
The ultimate. And that's where a true quantum computer could shine. It could analyze that entire, impossibly complex data set all at once. Not sequentially. It could perceive patterns that are completely invisible to a classical computer or to us. It could find the faint gravitational wave signature of a new kind of cosmic event, or, well, the one everyone thinks of.
A signal, a message.
The ultimate pattern in the noise. It could be the tool that allows us to finally hear that whispered conversation in the middle of the universe's rock concert.
Wow. From soundproofing the qubits to finally being able to hear the universe with them. That's quite a journey. It really brings it full circle. So, when I look back at our conversation, it feels like the story of this technology is a paradox in itself. It's this incredibly powerful, almost godlike concept that for now is so fragile, it's almost useless for anything practical.
I think that's the perfect way to see it. My final thought is one of cautious but profound optimism. We're not there yet. We might not have a truly fault-tolerant quantum computer for space exploration for a decade, or two, or more. But the path is there. For me, it's not about the far-off dream of decoding alien signals. It's about the tangible reality of building a better solar panel for the Gateway Station, based on a molecule we designed from scratch. The revolution will start small.
And for me, I guess I'm still stuck on the poetry of it. The idea that to understand the biggest thing there is, the cosmos, we have to master the smallest, most bizarre thing we know, the quantum realm. It feels right. It feels like a good story, that the key to the infinite is hidden in the infinitesimal.
A quantum leap, just like we said at the start. Well, that feels like a fitting place to leave it for today. The orchestra is still tuning up, but we're starting to hear the first few notes of the symphony.
Thank you for joining us on Space Generation.
We'll see you next time.